We're in Exodus chapter number 10, ready to turn our attention back to verse number 12. We did a bit of a cliffhanger last time, if you can call it that, since most of us know this story pretty well. Exodus 10:12 says, "Then he who is said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the land of Egypt for the locusts, so that they may come upon the land of Egypt and eat every plant in the land, all that the hail has left." So Moses and Aaron had just been probably bum-rushed out of the palace by Pharaoh's servants because they wouldn't agree to his offer that only the men of Israel can go on their little three-day journey into the wilderness for worship of He Who Is. Everybody else has to stay behind. They said, no, everybody needs to go. He says, no, it's not going to happen. Get out of my presence. And so God now tells Moses, all right, he was told locusts are coming, locusts like no one's ever known before. Let's get it going. Stretch out your hand. So verse 13, Moses stretched out his staff over the land of Egypt, and He Who Is brought an east wind upon the land all that day and all that night. So apparently it is either morning, maybe midday, after he's had his interview, his time with Pharaoh, when he lifts his hand and the wind begins. Now, the wind is blowing from the east generally. I would suggest it's probably more east-northeast. And it's going to blow all the rest of the day and all during the hours of darkness that are about to come. So we're probably talking 12, 15, 16 hours or so. And in that time, the wind is going to pick up a whole bunch of the locusts that are in the land of Canaan, maybe up in Syria, because that's the green zone that is east and a little bit north from Egypt. If you go due east from Egypt, it's all dry and deserty. That's the Arabian Peninsula, the Sinai Peninsula, and the Arabian Peninsula with its empty quarter. So more than likely, God causes this wind to suck up every living locust in the Holy Land and northward from the Holy Land. Maybe He causes them to be able to multiply on the way. But when they arrive, they are the biggest group of locusts that have ever been assembled. Verse 14, the locusts came up over all the land of Egypt and settled on the whole country of Egypt, such a dense swarm of locusts as had never been before, nor ever will be again. So it is absolutely the worst concentration of locusts that have ever happened. Now, I've never been in a locust plague. I really can't say that I've seen very many locusts. I grew up with some pretty good-sized grasshoppers, but locusts are a whole nother story. And I've seen pictures of locust plagues where these dense swarms are coming in and where they're crawling all over the ground. And some of that looked pretty bad. This is much worse than any of those. There has never been and never will be again a locust plague like this. Verse 15, they covered the face of the whole land so that the land was darkened. That is, when you look out of your door, all you see is a blanket of locusts on the ground. That's it. It looks like the ground is moving. They ate all the plants in the land. So they land in all of those fields with the ruined barley and the ruined flax, and they start gobbling that up. But they also land in the wheat fields that just kind of got knocked down and could have recovered, and they start eating that to the ground. They land on all those fruit trees whose branches and twigs have been knocked down. They eat the shattered limbs. They eat all the vegetation and, all the foliage, any blossoms, and all the bark off of the shattered limbs, but also on the actual trees themselves that have been broken. They land on those. And they're just basically eating anything that has life energy in it that is a plant. So they ate all the plants in the land, all the fruit of the trees that the hail had left. Not a green thing remained, neither tree nor plant of the field through all the land of Egypt. Now, we're focusing most of our attention on what was happening up in the Delta region and slightly south of the Delta. But remember, there's a green ribbon that goes all the way south along the Nile River that is still part of Egypt. In fact, the official capital of Egypt during this dynasty, which I believe is the 18th, is clear down at Thebes. That's like 500 miles or so south of the Delta. But Pharaoh and his people apparently gather up closer to the Delta in the spring of the year. More than likely, it's to provide them with an early launching point to go on military campaigning up into Canaan, because we know that Thutmose III has been and will be involved in trying to take over the people of Canaan. But anyway, all of this is happening up in the Delta region where there is a ton of green. But all of that green gets eaten up by these locusts. So you know it must have been a bunch of them. Now Pharaoh, while he's seeing this happen right in front of his eyes, verse 16, he hastily called Moses and Aaron and said, "I've sinned against he who is your God and against you. Now therefore, forgive my sin, please, only this once. Plead with he who is your God, only to remove this death from me." So he is panicked. He is desperate. He has got to get this plague stopped. Because remember, his people, after the hail plague, when they were being warned that another plague was on its way, they said, "Just let him go. We're ruined. Get those people out of here. We can't handle anymore." And they were doing that because they thought they'd lost just part of their harvests. Now they're losing all of this year's harvest. And so Pharaoh is like, "Please, please stop this plague. Stop this death." Verse 18. So he went out from Pharaoh and pleaded with he who is. Now, Pharaoh did not explicitly say, you'll notice, that he was going to let the people go. All he said was, "I've sinned, I'm sorry, please beg your God to take this stuff away." So, just on that pleading, Moses leaves, he and Aaron, and they go out and they make their public prayer request to God to stop the locust plague. So verse 19, he who is turned the wind into a very strong west wind. So the wind that had brought the locusts had come generally from the east, I think more likely from the east northeast. Now God turns the wind around, makes it even stronger, and he blows it from the west. I actually think a little bit from the west, northwest. And he catches up all of those locusts that are no doubt just glutted with all of that vegetable matter, all that vegetation. And it says, this wind lifted the locusts and drove them into the Red Sea. Now, you've got the large portion of the Red Sea that is an arm of the Indian Ocean. It's there off of the northeastern corner of the Africa continent. But you've also got the western arm of the Red Sea that comes up very close to the delta. And this is the Suez arm of the Red Sea. And so a lot of these locusts apparently end up in the Suez arm of the Red Sea. Not a single locust was left in all the country of Egypt. So God cleared them all out. Everything he brought, he cleared out. Once that was done, once that miracle was accomplished, and really, you should think about this as being 10 plagues followed by 10 miracles, all right? Because God always brings an end to the plague. Verse 20, but he who is hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the people of Israel go. So here's our third time, I believe, that we see that God specifically hardens Pharaoh's heart so that he can continue until the end of the punishment of Pharaoh, of his leadership, and of the gods and the goddesses of Egypt. That leaves us two plagues. Verse number 21. Then he who is said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, a darkness to be felt. So Moses stretched out his hand toward heaven, and there was pitch darkness in all the land of Egypt 3 days. Now this is where I'm going to make a recommendation of a date assignment. And that's all it is a recommendation. In the story of Israel's departure from Egypt, the only certain dates that we have start with the 14th day of the first spring month of the Jewish year, and then the 15th day following that in the evening when the sun goes down. The 15th is when the Israelis leave. So those dates we know. I suspect that the darkness is going to start on the 11th. And the reason I think that is because the Israelis will be told to pick a Passover lamb on the 10th of the first month. And they are to hold that lamb in their houses until the 14th. And so I believe that the reason for the 10th being the day on which the Passover lambs was chosen was because it was the day before the darkness fell. So it is my contention, my opinion, that the days of darkness will be the 11th, the 12th, and the 13th of the first spring Jewish month. I'll talk more about that later. So this is a darkness that can be felt. Some people have suggested that this is a monster sandstorm that comes in. I understand that suggestion, and I can't say that it most definitely wasn't, but I would note that there's no mention of wind. There's no mention of sand. There's no mention of any type of abrasiveness that would come from something like that. I honestly believe that this is some sort of weird darkness created by God himself that descends upon the nation. So Moses stretched out his hand toward heaven. There was pitch darkness on all the land of Egypt 3 days. Now, the 3 days tells us for sure it's not an eclipse. First of all, eclipses only happen at full moons. Total eclipses are very rare. And they only last for part of a day, actually a very small part of a day. So 3 days of darkness cannot be accounted for as an eclipse. So that's out of the picture altogether. Verse 23, they did not see one another, nor did they anyone rise from his place for 3 days. So they are so stricken by the presence of darkness, a darkness that they can feel, that they just hunker down in place for 3 days. Now, I believe, again, that their lamps would have worked to push back the darkness a little bit, but not nearly enough to make them feel comfortable to go about and just carry on business as usual. So that's why they're stuck in their houses. But I love this next reminder. At the end of verse 23, it says, but all the people of Israel had light where they lived. So wherever the land of Goshen borderline is, apparently you go from being in darkness to suddenly being in the light again. That there's this opening in the darkness for the land of Goshen to be completely in the light. And this just adds to the miracle to help the Israelis see how powerful God is, and also to remind the Egyptians, hey, your sun god Ra, he's not so powerful, is he? Because the God of the Hebrews, he who is, can turn out your light just like that, but leave their light on. So apparently, in that third day of darkness, and remember, the Israelis count days starting from sunset. So this darkness would not have been pronounced until daylight hours. And then it would have continued until that third day when Moses, at God's command, lets the light come back on again. Verse 24. So Pharaoh, who's been in the darkness for 3 days, called Moses and said, you go, serve he who is, serve this Yahweh. Your little ones also may go with you. Only let your flocks and your herds remain behind. So he says, okay, I'll let all your people go, but I want you to leave your animals here as collateral. I want them here as a promise that you're coming back. Verse 25, but Moses said, you must also let us have sacrifices and burnt offerings that we may sacrifice to he who is our God. Our livestock also must go with us. Not a hoof shall be left behind, for we must take of them to serve he who is our God, and we do not know with what we must serve he who is until we arrive there. So basically, no, all of our animals need to go, because it won't be until we've arrived at the worship site that we can pick from among all of our animals the best ones. So everything has to go. Verse 28, Pharaoh then said to him,
Get away from me.
Take care never to see my face again. For on the day you see my face, you shall die. So he is angry about this insistence that all the Israelis and all their animals have to go. And he threatens Moses. Don't you ever come back here again. I don't want to ever see your face again because I will kill you. I will have you killed the next time I see you. That's how angry he has become. And Moses says back to him, as you say, I will not see your face again. Now that tells us then that the information about the 10th plague is communicated to Pharaoh here at the same time that the tail end of the 9th plague is being talked about. And so I want you to be able to kind of mesh those things together in a little bit. Because as often happens in historical material, we get deluged with so much material that we have to understand that some of the material takes place at different times. Because, you know, we follow through with all the information about one event and it takes us past a certain time and date. And then we have to kind of rewind and go back, okay, while some of that was happening, this was happening. And so there's just such a wealth of material here that we'll need to put some little chronological reminders in from time to time. And so I'm just kind of putting a pin here for you to remember that the 10th plague is, the information about 10th plague is passed on here before Pharaoh says, don't you ever come back here or I'll kill you. And Moses saying, no, we won't be back. We won't see your face again. Chapter number 11. He who is said to Moses, yet one plague more I will bring upon Pharaoh and upon Egypt. Afterward, he will let you go from here. And when he lets you go, he will drive you away completely. Now, Moses had already been told about this 10th plague being the final plague while he was at Mount Sinai during the burning bush commissioning episode. It's going to be the death of the firstborn. And you'll remember that Moses was to verbalize to Pharaoh from the very beginning, if you don't let my firstborn Israel go, I will kill or execute your firstborn. And so we have gone through 9 plagues, and we're now ready for the climactic 10th plague. And God says, Moses, this 10th plague will break it all loose. And not only will he let you guys go, he will basically tell you to get out as fast as you can go. He will tell you he doesn't want to see you anymore. He wants you gone. Now, when that happens, Moses, you need to have all of the people ready to collect their back wages. Now, that's my way of phrasing it. But this is what God tells Moses to pass on. Verse 2. Speak now in the hearing of the people, that they may ask every man of his neighbor, every woman of her neighbor, for silver and gold jewelry. And it won't be just jewelry. It won't be just silver and gold in its whatever form it's in. There will also be clothing involved in this. And this will be, as has been referred to earlier, as the spoiling of the Egyptians. I like to say it's the collecting of their back wages. They have not been paid properly during the generations of slavery. And so when they leave, they will be wealthy, but it'll be a wealth that has come because they worked for all of it without being paid. And there's going to be penalty money as well in it, I suppose you could say. So verse 3, and he who is gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. And that'll come later. They will talk to the Egyptians in the middle of the night after the death of the firstborn and say, you need to give us our back wages so that we can leave. And the people of Egypt will be so afraid of God's wrath that they will give all of the loose silver and gold materials and clothing that they have to the Israelites. And from that, the tabernacle will be built. Verse 3, and he who is gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. Moreover, the man Moses was very great in the land of Egypt and in the sight of Pharaoh's servants and in the sight of the people. So everybody, by the time we've got through 9 of the plagues, they are very impressed with Moses because he's the one that's been passing on God's word through Aaron about these plagues. Now, before we close up for the day, let me remind you that in the book of Revelation, we will see something similar to this with the two witnesses. They will be acting as the orchestrators of God's 7 wrath events, so that God tells them to tell the beast leader and his kingdom, this is what's coming next because you took the mark of the beast, because you don't bow the knee to the one and true and living God, the creator of heaven and earth. And so I always like to kind of make that parallel of understanding between the book of Exodus and the book of Revelation.